Good evening, I'm Art Bell. Of course, with us, Linda Moulton Howe from Philadelphia. No, she's all the way over here on the West Coast in Oregon. 3,000-mile jaunt for Linda, but we've got her. She'll be followed this evening by Dolores Cannon. And the subject will be Nostradamus. Her books, a trilogy, Conversations with Nostradamus, appropriate for this time of year, as will Linda's report be, as you will discern in a moment. Emmy Award-winning documentary producer, investigator into crop circles and animal mutilations now for years, early on an environmental reporter, and now a general science reporter for us as well. Here from Portland, Oregon, quite a change of venue, is Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, welcome.
Well, hi, Art. I have been in Portland this weekend scanning images for my new book, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2, which, if all goes well, should be in nationwide bookstores this time by March of 1998. So pray for me.
I do pray for you, Linda. Books are like having babies.
I know, they really are. So that's why I'm here, and that's what's coming in the spring, I hope. And tonight is December 21st, the beginning of the winter solstice period, when the days begin to get longer again.
Oh, yes.
And as I was watching the sun go down this afternoon on this beautiful Willamette River in Portland, I began to think about the fact that the Egyptians used to bring greenery into their homes at the winter solstice to encourage the gods to renew the vigor of the new planting cycle. And it wasn't until the 1600s that the ancient December rituals for birth and renewal were joined to celebrate Christ's birth, and Christmases began. And I've been thinking back over the past 12 months of stories that I've reported on Dreamland and Coast to Coast since last December. 12 months ago, that comet.
The comet.
Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Art. What were you going to
say? No, that's quite all right. Comet Hale-Bopp. I mean, I'm going to reminisce with you, I suppose.
So. Yes. Okay. Well, 12 months ago, that comet Hale-Bopp was approaching the sun and became the biggest, brightest, dusty ice ball to come through our solar system since the great comet of 1811. By March, members of the Heaven's Gate cult created a social uproar when they committed mass suicide to allegedly reach another intelligence camouflaged by the comet. Astronomers insisted that Hale-Bopp was only a comet and the first one ever seen with three tails. One of the tails, it's now turned out, was made entirely of sodium atoms, probably emitted from more dust mixed with that Hale-Bopp comet than ever, or mostly usually seen with comets, that comets usually don't have that much dust. Also last March, strange unidentified lights in V formations were seen by thousands of people moving over Arizona, and a week later over parts of Ohio that many people did not learn about, but were very similar to what happened over Arizona and are still a mystery. And now this December is ending with reports of more sky phenomena, multiple fireballs falling in Bogota, Colombia, South America, and an apparent huge hot meteorite plunging into the icy tip of Greenland that we talked about on Coast to Coast.
Thank you. Thank you for the word apparent.
Yeah, well, that's right, because we might have to wait until next summer to find out what's there, and because this whatever it is may have gone down in the ice so deeply.
Or until it crawls out.
Well, 98 has a lot of prophecies to it, Art, so that's a question to ask Dolores Cannon.
There you are.
And between these astronomical bookends of the year, many other events and discoveries have left a residue for me about 1997 that is both alarming and, I will say, I am also excited, possibly, about the future. First, the alarm bells have been sounded in 1997 from a growing number of scientists that I have interviewed over the year who all say the same thing. More and more hard data from every part of the globe indicates an increasingly rapid deterioration of our planet's ability to sustain life in the face of human population and pollution. And your phrase, Art, the quickening, is a good description because it is an acceleration of change, both good and bad. In 1997, even some sharks in oceans and wild honeybees that pollinate plants are facing extinction. The water organism Fisteria killed millions of fish from Maryland to Florida and made many people sick. New diseases not seen before have been killing coral and tropical fish off Florida's coast and provoking huge life-threatening tumors in sea turtles throughout the world. Increased UV light from globally thinning ozone has been killing amphibian eggs and plankton in the oceans, threatening the food chain. In 1997, more rainforests were cut down than in any previous year, rapidly destroying natural habitats and increasing the extinction rate of plant and animal species, now estimated to be at least 25,000 a year. That means between last Christmas and this Christmas, at least 25,000 species of Earth life disappeared forever.
Ho, ho, ho.
Now, what will it take for the human species to wake up to the implications of all this? What will it take to make all humans realize that the air and water are not guaranteed to last unless we protect them? But 1997 was also an exciting year of revolutionary breakthroughs in science. A headline on the front page of the Philadelphia Inquirer dated Thursday, August 8th, 1996, more than a year ago, had said signs of life on Mars, ? Some scientists cheer and some are doubtful. And as 96 went into 97, more scientists were coming forward saying that they thought that they also had evidences of globules in some of the meteorites that might have come from Mars that looked like possibly bacteria. And even though scientists attacked the announcement as premature, Cornell University astronomer, who is now deceased, but at the time said, quote, "This is the most provocative and evocative piece of evidence for life beyond Earth. If the results are verified, it is a turning point in human history, suggesting that life exists not on just two planets in one paltry solar system, but throughout this magnificent universe." And since Dr. Sagan said those words, by July 1997, the Mars Pathfinder and its little roving machine landed on the red planet for the first time since we go back over 20 years. The rover dutifully followed orders to inspect Martian rocks, and the first five turned out to be so much alike and so high in silica content that scientists were surprised. One theory is that maybe the rocks are left over from volcanic eruptions. This fall, the Mars Global Surveyor will start aerobraking its way down to a shallow polar orbit to photograph a topographic map of the Martian surface, may take another closer look or a wide shot of the Cydonia region and that strange face in those pyramids. And the next orbiter-lander pair is set for launch in December 1998 and January 1999 as humankind inches its way toward a manned mission to Mars in the next century if we can survive what we're doing to our own planet. Further out in space, our Earth probe Galileo took astonishing photographs of Jupiter's moon Europa showing a cracked, icy surface. It might have a liquid ocean underneath, and maybe even life forms.
Well, as they also said in one of the year's best films, if there's not someone else out there, it sure is a big waste of space.
Yes, I would agree. And back on Earth, 1997 was the first year for cloned sheep and other animals, something that has come up quite a bit in the discussions of people who allege encounters with non-human intelligence. This is a shock to the human psyche, the ability to clone full animals from another animal. And it's a foreshadowing, perhaps, of a future many of us are probably not ready for. Immediate public reactions were to ban cloning, especially of humans. U.S. President Bill Clinton proclaimed that, quote, "Each human life is unique, born of a miracle that reaches beyond laboratory science," unquote.
Linda, if I could interrupt,
yeah.
On cloning, a December 18th AP story says now not only have they cloned, but they now have cloned lambs with human genes.
That's what I was leading to.
Oh, I see. All right.
Exactly. But I'm glad that you brought it up. That is so important. The director of the U.S. National Institutes of Health, Harold Varmus, told the Congressional Committee after the first cloning announcement that despite negative reaction to the idea of cloning human beings, society might at some point decide that human cloning is acceptable for certain conditions, such as providing new organs for children for infertile companies, for infertile couples. And this week, these new cloned sheep that were announced carry part of a human gene that will hopefully be able to provide medical treatment for certain disease complexes in the sheep's milk. So we have now moved into using the cloning of animals with certain human genes to try to provide us medicine.
Well, we'll either get something good like that or Planet of the Lambs.
Well, I am going to opt for a positive evolution here. And we might be able to clone life now, but we still don't know exactly who our genetic forebears were. In 1997, scientists in Germany and the United States reported that DNA comparisons between preserved bone of a Neanderthal and modern humankind showed there is no relationship. So who or what is the immediate precursor to Cro-Magnon Homo sapiens sapien? That is still one of the great mysteries as we evolve into the 21st century. Revolution is everywhere, from medicine to technology, and one of the most amazing stories reported in the December issue of Discover was headlined, "Let There Be Matter. Einstein taught us that matter is just another form of energy. Now physicists have, for the first time, created bits of matter from beams of light."
May I ask you a personal question?
Yeah.
Do you think it, Linda, more likely that we will find the missing link or the equivalent of the obelisk?
In this new book, Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2, that's coming out in March, I'm actually trying to deal with what appear to be growing implications that our history, our forebears may actually be linked to manipulation of DNA in already evolving primates. And that would mean, Art, that the missing link is not what we are expecting to find under sand somewhere. It means that the potential is that the missing link has to do with another intelligence interacting with our planet. And is the human family prepared, ready, and desiring to understand more about what I think of as the forbidden history of mankind?
I don't think so, Linda.
Well, maybe they're not. But
I mean, some are. Some are evolved and prepared for it. But I tend to agree with Brookings' report. I mean, the scientists, all the paradigms, the religious institutions, and on and on and on. Are they prepared? No.
You may be right, but all my life I really have wanted to know the truth about everything on this planet, and I think that this is one of the big areas that we're going to hear more and more and more about as we do move into the next year, two, three, and into the next century. And it also ties in perhaps to the questions that are beginning to emerge in quantum physics about the relationship of matter to energy and energy to matter, and how much life might there be through the cosmos. And the story that I was mentioning by Jeffrey Winters in the December issue of Discovery Magazine is such an astonishing story, because they were able to take E equals mc squared, the famous formula from Einstein, and basically reverse it. They were able to take the usual matter-antimatter annihilation energy at the Stanford Linear Accelerator, and with the use of gamma-ray photons, they were able to take a blaze of energy and make matter from photons, and it reminded me, as closing out tonight and the end of this year as we move into 1998, one of the most amazing quotes, a penetrating insight, I think, into the true reality of things, was written by David Bohm, the famous theoretical physicist who has written many important books. One of the most important was Wholeness and the Implicate Order. But this is from an interview that was done and recorded in a book edited by Renee Weber, and he said, quote, mass is a phenomenon of connecting light rays which go back and forth, sort of freezing them into a pattern. So matter, as it were, is condensed or frozen light. That's you, Art, that's me, the chairs, the plants, everything. Light is not merely electromagnetic waves, but in a sense, other kinds of waves that go at that speed. Therefore, all matter is a condensation of light into patterns moving back and forth at average speeds, which are less than the speed of light.
Well, I believe the Hubble recently observed the dying of stars and the gases produced, and then the beginning of the birth of new stars from those same gases.
That's right, and that's matter producing matter. What these scientists at Princeton have done, and what David Bohm is talking about, is a conversion of energy to matter and matter back to energy in terms of light, which is it is in many ways remarkable, because long ago there was a test of this called the Bell's experiment, in which they were experimenting with photons in a laboratory, and they were testing the spin of the photons. It's been reproduced many times, and recently there have even been further evolutions on this test, and what they found is that the spin and the relationship of the photons, no matter what they did in the experiment, no matter where, no matter how far apart they put them, the photons acted as if every photon knew what every other photon was doing.
Okay,
and the implication is the universe is connected from one end to the other.
Hold it right there. We'll be right back.
This is Dreamland with Art Bell. Now, here again is Art.
Once again, here I am, and we're going to finish with Linda Moulton Howe and kind of a year-end review. We are all light. The desk, the telephone, your very being, we are all light. And that caused me to think during the break, weren't the first words something like, let there be light? Linda?
And now, scientists at Princeton are saying, now let there be matter made from light. And when I was talking to you about this very profound quote from David Bohm, the theoretical physicist, and he was talking about his idea that all mass is essentially condensed or frozen light, he concluded his thought with this sentence. You could say that when we come to light, we are coming to the fundamental activity in which existence has its ground. And on that thought, that ending, as we go now from 97, a very accelerated revolutionary kind of year into 1998 with so many unknowns, I'm going to try in January to do two interviews for Dreamland, and we might do something on Coast that would focus on the new transportation of photons that appear to be something like a teleportation of photons story. And another is a scientist on the East Coast that I've talked to who has written a book that is suggesting that there are an infinite number of universi and that we are only in one of those universes on a, like a series of bubbles that are flung out over space and time. And this, I think, Art, is sort of the hallmark of what we're going to be evolving into more and more, a completely new redefinition of what we are, where we came from, and what our relationship is to matter, this universe, and to photon energy, which is light.
All right. Linda, if you would, your contact information.
This is Linda Howe, and my fax number, and I would welcome any information from any of you on any subject matter ranging from the environment to unusual phenomena in your area. My fax number is area code 215-491-9842. That's 215-491-9842. And for those of you who like to write, it is Post Office Box 300 in Jamison, J-A-M-I-S-O-N, Pennsylvania, zip code 18929. Again, that's Post Office Box 300, Jamison, Pennsylvania, zip code 18929. And Art, and to all of our Dreamland listeners, I wish you the merriest Christmas and the happiest New Year, and may 1998 be a wonderful year and not one as catastrophic as prophecy has said.
Linda, I will see you, speak with you on the program next time in 1998. May it be so.
Yes, God bless us all.
Take care.
All right.
All right, that's Linda Moulton Howe, and there you go. May it not be a year that will be as catastrophic as prophesized. It's a good thought to end the year with, isn't it? Now, Dolores Cannon has become perhaps the world's most unlikely expert on the prophecies of Nostradamus. She is a retired naval wife from Huntsville, Alabama, Arkansas. She was nearly 50 years old when she began experimenting with hypnosis and past life regression. And the results were, to say the least, quite spectacular. Working through several different subjects, Dolores was able to establish communication with the prophet Nostradamus. His revelations and their impact on our own time are both fascinating and at times somewhat frightening. She is well known throughout the world. She considers herself a regressionist and psychic researcher who specializes in the recovery and cataloging of lost knowledge. She has appeared all over the place, including A Current Affair in Australia, Ancient Mysteries of the World, a two-hour special on CBS, Ancient Prophecies, a two-hour special on NBC, Encounters, an hour special on Fox, interviewed on CNN's International Entertainment News. I could go on and on and on. All the networks, she's been all over the place, but right now she is here. So, without any further ado, here is Dolores Cannon. Dolores, welcome to the program.
Okay, hello, Art.
Hi there.
Okay, one thing I wanted to say, I was listening to Linda on there, and, you know, I've written 10 books, and a lot of the things she is talking about, I've also researched.
Well, I'm
sure. Cloning, you know, seeding of the planet Earth, and that we are light. So this is amazing that this is all, we all seem to be on the same track.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Uh-huh. And like you said, I consider myself a reporter, a researcher of lost knowledge, and I like to find out all the strange and the unusual.
Well, there's plenty of lost knowledge out there, Dolores. Why don't you tell us how you began with Nostradamus?
Okay, that's what I was thinking, because I have written 10 books, you do want to focus on Nostradamus tonight, so that's what we'll do. All right, first of all, I want to make it very clear that I am not a channeler, and I am not a psychic in my own right. I am a hypnotist, a hypnotherapist, and I have been doing past life regression, past life therapy for almost 20 years. This is where you take the person into the other lifetimes to find the answers to the problems in this lifetime. You probably had many people that do that on your show.
I have, and I have a question already. May I ask it?
Sure, I guess.
Dolores, there has been a great controversy among scientists, among psychiatrists and others, regarding hypnosis period, particularly regression and the false memory syndrome and all the rest of it. In other words, whether somebody like yourself would hypnotize somebody and, in effect, send them in the direction that they want them to go, and setting their fantasy loose and then suggesting what they want to hear and getting, in fact, what they want to hear. How do you address that It's very important because it's basic.
Yeah, and I know I have heard those arguments, you know, and if I've heard them all over the world, even in England, where I just came back from working on some cases over there. But what I always say is that if you are a reputable hypnotist, you will not lead the person, and you will not try to direct them in any way. And people that know my work will realize I bend over backwards the other way not to lead, because I know that's the very first thing that the skeptics will say, oh, you said thus and such, and that is what made them say these things.
Right.
So I just allow the person to tell their own story, and then I try to relate that to their life. Most of the time I allow them to do it themselves, but there is a lot of controversy out there right now of what they call these false memory syndromes, you know, where they have implanted the memories, especially about the child abuse cases that have been very bad. But I think these are people who, I don't want to say they're unethical, but they're definitely going about it the wrong way. Because if the memory's not there and you suggest that, it can cause a great deal of harm.
You may recall a recent 60 Minutes piece on a doctor who had some lady over a period of years convinced she had about 120 some odd personalities.
Yes, I saw that. It was on, I think, the last Sunday, and that was awful because it was definitely the hypnotist that was doing it, the doctor. I can't imagine what kind of reason he had for doing it, but he certainly ruined the woman's life.
Well, I believe the medical bill in that case ran into the hundreds of thousands of dollars if you're looking to motive.
Oh, yeah, that might be what he was getting out of it, but he certainly wasn't helping the person. In my early years of doing this, up until the last few years, I never charged for anything that I did. And I would travel many, many miles to work with people. The main idea, I was trying to help the person. And that was the main motive. And along the way, these different stories and historical things that I've written about came out.
Dolores, when did you first discover that you could actually regress somebody? That must have been a big aha moment when you could regress them prior to their birth.
Okay, I'll tell you what happened. My roots in hypnosis actually go back into the 1960s. I began practicing almost 20 years ago, but they actually went back in the 1960s. In those days, there weren't any books out or anything to tell you what to do. And my husband was really the hypnotist, even though we were in the Navy. He was doing it more or less as a hobby, but he was working with doctors on the base to help people with losing weight and things like that.
Sure.
So totally by accident, in the 1960s, while he was working with a woman about weight loss, she suddenly just went back into a lifetime in the 1920s.
Oh, my.
And we're sitting there thinking, well, what's going on now? You know, we didn't have any idea what was happening, but it was very fascinating. That's one thing. I've always had a great curiosity. When something happens like that, instead of getting frightened, I always get very curious.
Dolores, what kinds of things did she say that gave you that first aha moment? My God, we're in the 20s. We're not.
Yeah, that's it, because she was a woman, oh, let me see, I guess she would have been in her 30s or early 40s in
right.
the 1960s, and suddenly she's talking about being in a big black car in Chicago. And, you know, we said, what year is this? And she said, what do you mean, silly? It's 1926.
Wow.
And we're thinking, wait a minute here. You
right.
know, she's definitely, we're definitely not in Kansas anymore.
Right.
And
right.
The same goes, you know.
Well, how did you and your husband evaluate that? I mean, it must have challenged everything you thought at the time.
Oh, it did, because, in, like I said, there were no books out at that time to even tell you what was going on. The only book that was printed then was The Search for Bridey Murphy, and that book wouldn't even be printed now. It would be considered too dull and mundane and boring, but you know, I have many cases like that. But in those days, that was the only book that was out. And then later, after this, Jess Stern's book, The Search for the Girl with Blue Eyes, came out. But at the time, there was nothing to tell you what to do, so we were more or less just feeling our way. So out of curiosity, we wanted to see if there was anything else. And she went back through five different lifetimes till when she was created. And to me, this was the biggest thing we had ever stumbled across. And at the time, you know, people on the Navy base were coming to our house to listen to the latest chapter. On the portable recorders you had in those days, they were so big you couldn't even lift them.
Yes.
Those great big, you know, reel-to-reel things. But we kept the woman anonymous, but they wanted, they were so fascinated by what was going on.
Well, the clear implication of all this, then, is that there is reincarnation.
Oh, yes, because of all the things that have happened to me have happened by accident. But the way it turned out, anyway, my husband was almost killed, so he was put out of the Navy, and we ended up in Arkansas on top of a mountain out here. I never thought I was going to be doing anything else but taking care of the family and things like that. But you know how it happens when all the children leave and it's like, what are you going to do with the rest of your life?
Sure.
I decided to get back into hypnosis because I thought it was so fascinating. So I developed my own technique at that time that is very fast, and it puts the person into the deepest possible level of trance, which is the somnambulistic level. And they go there automatically into the deepest possible level. And I began to do the therapy, and it was just very fascinating because automatically the person would go into a past life without being told to do it. And this is how I built my practice over all these years. Mostly out here, you know, just going from place to place, people that wanted to have these sessions. And along the way, all these fascinating stories have come out. So I'm an accumulator of evidence, a researcher.
All right. Are these people who knew the kind of work that you did, eventually you became well known, of course.
Yeah. At the beginning, you know, it's just back in the hills here.
I understand.
Yeah.
But do you, again, going back to, I guess, my earlier question, when you get a volunteer,
yeah,
and that volunteer knows the kind of work that you do, would there not be a predisposition on that person's part to explore a past life or past lives,
mm-hmm,
again, bringing up that basic question.
That maybe they would invent something, you mean, or what?
That's right.
I don't think so, because the things that have happened, the people are so startled when they hear it, and later they don't even want to listen to the tapes many times. One of the first cases I had, you know, after I began practicing, was a woman who died in the atomic bomb in Hiroshima as a Japanese man.
Wow.
You know, that was a very horrible, startling case to investigate.
All right. Well, here's where we can jump in and say, here's the proof. In other words, as you take these people back, regress people,
yeah,
and you find details of who they were and what they did in their previous life,
yeah,
it should be verifiable through historic records of all kinds.
Yes, it should be. But, you know, there is the big but, you know.
Okay.
Most of the time, you know, the only time they have records are in recent history. Because even the one in the 1920s, in the beginning, I said, oh, I want to prove this. And
sure.
I went through all the records trying to find things from Chicago, and I thought it would be easy. It is definitely not. Because even in the 1920s, they didn't have the records we have today. They didn't even begin keeping birth records until later. I think it was like the 30s and the 40s before it became a regular thing to keep birth records. So, you know, you can't really find the proof you're looking for. And then even if you do, there's always a skeptic out there that will say it doesn't matter, they won't believe in it. You know, no amount of proof is ever enough for a skeptic.
Do you know Dr. Bruce Goldberg?
Well, yes, I do. Yes, we've been on, we're on the lecture circuit.
Dr. Goldberg has done quite a bit of work in that area of trying to prove.
To verify, yeah.
And he's done some pretty fascinating stuff.
Oh, yeah. I've had, there have been several cases that have been brought to my attention where you have been able to do it. But a lot of times you're not able to do it, but the historical facts, not the existence of the person per se, but the historical situation that they lived in. You know what I mean? They are able to report historically what went on, even though it's very difficult to verify in research in the library.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that is proof, because most of these are just average people. Nowadays, they don't even teach geography and history that much in school, like we were taught, you know. But like the woman who, she was a young girl and dropped out of school when she was 16, and yet she was reporting the life of a Japanese man. And I found that during that part of the war, you know, especially during Hiroshima, there was no records of what the Japanese people went through.
Indeed.
And we were able to get the complete story of what it was like to be in Japan during the war. And I've had Japanese people write to me and say, you are absolutely accurate, that is the way it was.
Yes, that seems so unlikely to come from a flight of fancy.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So if I can, let me just ask you straight out, are you absolutely, in your own mind, Dolores, convinced that this is a valid scientific path to follow?
I think it is, and surprisingly enough, a lot of the psychiatrists and psychologists that I've spoken with, and I've spoken before boards of psychologists, are beginning to use this method. They want to learn how to do it. They said it doesn't matter if they believe in it or if the patient believes in it. If it helps the person, that's the main thing.
Sure.
So they're beginning to switch over now, too. And that's why I don't really know if it matters if you can prove beyond a doubt the person existed. If the memory helps them in the present life, that's about all we can hope for. And that's really what it's all about. But along the way, I've gotten some very good historical books out of it. To me, that's fascinating.
And then somehow, in the pursuit of all this, at some point, you ran into Nostradamus.
Yeah. That's why I wanted to give a little background. It turned out to be a more than a little background.
Oh, no, that's quite all right.
What happened so that you would understand that it is not a case of channeling at all. It was totally spontaneous and unexpected.
Okay. We will come back and we will delineate between what you have done and channeling and then launch into what you know about Nostradamus.
Okay, hold that thought.
Okay, and that's right. And then, of course, what Nostradamus knows about what's coming. It is going to be a wild year. It's going to be a wild millennium. I think there is no question about that. I mean, we're already in it. I call it the quickening. It's just a word. It's happening all around us. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. This is Dreamland.
Now, here again is Art.
Once again, here I am. That's with Dolores Cannon is my guest. She is well known, internationally known, for her work with regressive hypnosis into prior lives. And one of them bumped square into Nostradamus, and we're about to enter that territory. Dolores, if I might, let me ask you this. Let me tell you this, first of all. I've got a sister who lives up in Berkeley, California.
Yeah.
And she channels.
Oh, okay.
Now, I must tell you, as I have said over the air for many years, I don't necessarily doubt that there may be some real channeling, but I am highly skeptical because I think there is too much room for fraud.
Oh, yes, I agree with you there because I've sat in on a lot of channeling sessions, and I think most, a lot of times they don't even say anything.
I know.
You know, there isn't any information there at all.
So the question is, how do you differentiate channeling from what you have done?
Okay, there is a big difference. That's one thing people are saying, that what I've done with Nostradamus, there isn't even a name for it. They said they can't call it channeling, you can't really call it hypnosis, because it seems to have gone beyond hypnosis. I would like to call it time travel, because we were able to establish direct contact with the living Nostradamus, not his spirit or ghost, the living Nostradamus, while he is living in France in the 1500s, while he is writing the quatrains. So there's something to do here with a time lapse, and there's nothing to do with channeling, because they said this is not what occurs. It's very hard to explain. But whenever he was communicating with us, he said, I want to be very emphatic that you are not speaking to the dead. I'm not a spirit floating around out here. He says, we are communicating while I'm alive.
Now, alive in the physical sense today.
In the physical sense, yes. It is as though we are really in his life, as though making a telephone call to him while he is living. Because if in the books I go into many times where his wife would come knocking at the door and he'd say, I'm sorry, I have to leave. She's got supper on the table. One time they brought a child to him that had been hurt. A carriage outside the house.
I understand. Let me stop you. Are you saying then that you are communicating with the present incarnation of Nostradamus?
That's what makes it different and strange, and there's no way that it can be explained. But see, if that is true, that brings up the metaphysical theory of simultaneous time. that there is no time. It's all occurring at once.
Indeed.
Which is also very hard to explain. They always tell my lecturers, explain what you mean. I can't explain it any better than that, except that it's all occurring at once.
Well,
he's so emphatic, he didn't want to know his own future. He didn't even want to know how he was going to die.
I have heard it expressed that time was invented so everything doesn't happen at once. At any rate, how long have you been in such communication?
Okay, that was a very strange story. If I can tell you what's happened, incidentally, they have an option on this to turn it into a TV movie or a TV series or something, because they said they've never been told before. It's a very unusual, strange story. But if they do it, I'd like to be involved to make sure it's told accurately and not blown out of proportion.
Good luck.
And that's the thing, you know, because this doesn't need any fiction writer. It is strange enough in its own right.
Here, here.
Leave it alone. Okay, let me explain what happened, because I still have problem myself believing what happened. It occurred in 1986, and as I said, I was a past life regressionist, past life therapy. And I was working with a woman who just wanted to go back into a past life to see if she'd had one. She didn't have any problems or anything, just out of curiosity. She didn't know anything about metaphysics. Later we found out she didn't even know who Nostradamus was. She couldn't even pronounce his name. But I call her a normal woman, but she had 10 children, and she was working two jobs to try to take care of this big family. So it isn't the kind of person you could say, well, let's find time here to think up a hoax to fool the world.
Right.
You know, I've been accused of all kinds of things.
I'm sure you have.
But anyway, we had the session. And she went back into the 1500s in France, where she was a student of Nostradamus, a male student. And I thought at the time, well, you know, maybe I could get some interesting information, because I'm always looking for information. What could she tell me about this great man? And I was asking her questions about that. And that's where everything got very strange, because suddenly she said, he wants to speak to you. And if there's anyone out there listening who is a past life therapist, they will know this never happens when you're doing past life therapy. The person you are communicating with is the only one that is aware of you.
Right.
No one in the scene would know what was going on. But if it's true that he was such a great psychic, maybe he was able to pick up on something that was unusual. But anyway, she said, he wants to speak to you. And then became a three-way conversation. She was telling me what he was saying, and then she was repeating what I was saying, as though she was in the middle, relaying it back and forth. And what he said was, he had been looking for a link to the future, because he could see that his quatrains, his prophecies, were not being correctly interpreted.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And the time was coming when they were going to come true. He said it was an urgency. And he said he had an assignment for me. He said, I want you to get the book. He said, I could see in your time period there is a book that has the French and the English of the quatrains. And he said, I want you to read them to me, and I will explain them to you, symbol by symbol, anagram by anagram, and tell you in what part of history it belongs.
There are many in the audience who will not even understand what they're hearing when we talk of Nostradamus. He was,
yes,
of course, a prophet,
yes,
and he wrote his predictions in quatrains, which are somewhat difficult to read and understand, and they were intentionally done in that manner.
Yes, you're very convoluted, what I call them.
So that they would not attach him to a cross and burn him at the stake, which they were doing to people of that sort at that time.
Yeah, he lived in the time of the Inquisition,
yes,
in France, and it was very dangerous to be doing what he was doing.
Very dangerous.
That's why he devised this code. And when this happened, I didn't even know what a quatrain was. A quatrain is a four-line poem, but in the case of Nostradamus, it's a four-line prophecy or puzzle. And he wrote almost 1,000 of these that have come down to our time.
1,000?
Almost 1,000. He told me later he actually wrote 1,500 of them, but only just a little under 1,000 have survived in our time.
Objectively, with what we know of the 1,000 that he did write, objectively, how many have come true?
I would gather to say maybe half or more, because see, in my work with him, this is the first time in history all of these have been interpreted and translated and put into their proper little niche. It has never been done before. All the other books will explain what the words mean, because he has strange words as well as symbols, and uses many different languages.
Mm-hmm.
There are many books that will tell you what the words mean, but not what the prophecy means. And when we were finished, well, I do want to finish with this girl, because
Please.
It was very interesting
Yes.
what happened when she woke up. But anyway, all this is on my computer, and it took the computer to put the entire thing together. It is so much information. But he told me he wanted me to get the book and to read them to him, and it would be put into everyday language that people would understand. And, well, naturally, this was quite astounding. I was thinking, what's going on here? So when the woman woke up and I told her what she had said, she was so frightened she moved to Alaska.
Really?
So you can't say she started it. You can't say I started it. But before she left, we had time for one more session. I think she was doing it to appease me more than anything else.
Does she remain now in Alaska?
Oh, she comes back and forth from time to time. She was originally from there, and I think she wanted to go back, but this kind of hurried her up a little.
Well, we are heard in every city in the state of Alaska. She is likely listening to you now.
Very likely. Mm-hmm. But before she left, we had the one session, and she was in the process of moving and everything. It was not the ideal situation. But during the session, he came through again, and he said, I still want you to do this work. I said, I can't. She's moving away. He said, that doesn't matter. Now that we have made this connection, you will never lose me. I will come through anybody you work with.
Uh-huh.
And he gave me the instructions how to locate him, like giving you a telephone number, and also tests to perform to make sure I was actually speaking to him.
Are these parameters that you keep to yourself?
Yes, they are, because really... he's a very private person. I got to know him very well. He has a temper. I feel like I'm a student with a very stern teacher, is the way I feel. And he would get very angry at me. I found out he was a definite male chauvinist, but he's very busy. And it turned out that I was actually interfering in his life. I was told that what I thought took place in an hour session actually took up to 6 hours in his life. So here again, we're into a time distortion of some kind.
Colonel Haynes calls it time compression.
Well, in my work with UFOs, I have what I call time condensation, which is probably the same thing.
Probably, yes.
But the idea was that, obviously, where was we going there?
Well, that 6 hours on his end, 1 hour on our end.
So for that reason, I try not to bother him unless it's something important. There's been television shows that wanted me to prove it, you know, and I've done it on the air, but I'm taking someone just out of the camera crew. Show it can be done.
Oh, you mean and putting them under and doing
contact.
The content? Oh,
yeah,
my.
Yeah, we have done this on the air. I've done it for different
See.
Shows and things. But that's not the idea. You don't want to turn this into something like that.
No, not a circus.
No, I've got a great respect for the man, so I don't tell anyone how I do it, although there a lot of them want to find out.
I'm sure.
And in the book, I do mention the tests that I perform with all of the people I've worked with. Incidentally, before it was over, there have been 12 different people involved. And all of the story is told in the 3 volumes. That's why it took 3 volumes. It took so many twists and turns.
Mm-hmm.
But each one, we're able to locate the same man in the same room and continuing with the same story. He would say, well, I've been waiting for you. Can we get started?
Yes, that in itself is, and I assume you retain tapes of all of this.
Oh, yes, I've got all the tapes. And all the transcriptions.
Well, that itself would seem to be proof. I mean, if you are able to establish contact with the very same person again and again and again over 12 times.
And the other people don't even know what has been done before. They have
right.
no access to this. But yet they continue with the same scenario, the same story.
Remarkable. Remarkable. Well, obviously, where we are headed. You said that Nostradamus wished to make clear in good plain English his what were quatrains, his predictions.
Yes.
Now, Let me tell you, Dolores, you probably are not aware. I have written a book since we're about to launch into this myself.
Okay.
I've been doing talk radio for about, in this incarnation, for about 13 years, this program.
Uh-huh.
Or the one I do at night. And I began to notice over the last several years, Dolores,
yeah.
an acceleration in all areas of human events, socially, politically, economically, environmentally, you name it. I began to notice that things were occurring at a faster and faster and faster pace.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah.
And I would begin to talk to my listeners about this, and many would call in, and they would say, no, Art, it just seems that way because we have mass communications, because we hear about things instantly. So I thought, well, all right, finally, I got so fed up with it that I wrote a book called The Quickening, which actually documents that things are accelerating at an exponential pace. And I believe we are headed to, you know, I'm not a prophet, Dolores, but
yeah.
we are headed towards some kind of event or series of events. And so I documented that much, but I have certainly have never spoken with Nostradamus. And so now we are headed toward, you agree then?
Oh, yes,
with
I
that
do.
Premise.
And he even backed that up because he said the main thing we have to do is get through the decade of the 90s.
Mm.
He said there will be more tremendous events happening during the decade of the 90s than ever in the history of man before. But he said, you chose to live in this time, and you can work off more karma by living in this time in one life than you could, normally would take 10. So you could see that things are speeded up. They would have to be. And we have so many things coming at us. Used to be we could work on one problem at a time, but now it's all coming at us all at once.
1997, for me, personally, has been the best and worst year of my entire life. Both. Both, Dolores, both.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that for the world, for the nation, it is the best and worst of times.
Yes.
And from this point, I guess we're going to begin to move forward, and I guess you can give us the highlights, can't you?
Yes. Well, one thing he said he was giving us, you know, a lot of people don't like the prophecies because they say that they are doom and gloom.
Right.
He said he was giving us the worst case scenarios. What would happen if mankind didn't do something to stop these things?
Uh-huh.
In order to shake them up, he was going to have to give them the worst. He said, if I tell you the most horrible things mankind can do to himself, will you do something to stop it? That was the whole purpose of the communication, was to tell us what was going to happen so we could do something about it.
All right. Then when we return after the bottom of the hour, what I would like you to do, if you're willing, is to give us sort of a summary of what the worst case scenario is.
Okay.
And I hate to be negative myself, but as I watch the direction of mankind right now,
mm-hmm.
I don't think we're yet headed in a direction that is going to have us living out the best of the possibilities. Not yet.
He said we have to get through the worst. He calls this the time of trouble. Get through the time of troubles first, then you go into the 1,000 years of peace.
The time of troubles. All right. Well, that's what's coming next, folks, after the break here at the bottom of the hour. What do you think lies ahead? Do you want to know? If not, you should turn off your radio right now. If you want to know, that's coming up next. This is Dreamland.
This is Dreamland with Art Bell. Now again, here's Art.
Now again, here I am, and I am not a prophet, at least I hope I'm not. But we're about to get to the good stuff. I wonder if that's a fair phrase with Dolores Cannon and Nostradamus. Well, if you don't want to know the future, this is where you tune out. If you do, this is where you turn the volume up and listen very carefully. Once again, Dolores Cannon. Dolores, welcome back.
Okay.
Let us begin. What information has come from Nostradamus? What do we have to look forward to?
Okay, do you really want to know?
I really want to know, yes.
Okay. One thing I think is interesting is this information came through in the late 80s. And here we are 10 years ago. I thought the 90s were going to be a long way away, because he gave us dates, names, and places that would be occurring during the 90s. And much of this has already happened. Before, I could treat it kind of like a story. Well, maybe it will and maybe it won't. then when it began happening, that was scary, because did that mean the rest of it was going to happen? The books were first printed in 1989, the first volume was, and long before the Gulf War even started. But yet, in that first book, we had the date three different times for the beginning of the Gulf War. We had Saddam Hussein's name in anagram form. And, you know, all this is acting up again now. We're really, it's a very volatile situation over there.
Oh, yes.
But every time the books have gone into reprint, I've added updates in there saying this happened on thus and such a date. And it's now in its fourth printing, and so much occurred in the last year alone, I could no longer insert these into the books. I had to add a 50-page addendum to the back of Volume 1. And a lot of that was the prophecies that he had told us about the new types of computers. He told us that they would, the next computers were going to be operated by voice, which they have done. They're working on that, and they said the next ones after that would be operated by thought, which they are working on. And then after that, there would be what he called the organic computers.
Hmm.
And they are doing that now with the DNA computers.
Yes, they are.
And this was all in the prophecies. Also, what they talked about, nanotechnology, he predicted that. And at the time, even though he didn't have a name for it, he described it perfectly. And he even mentioned the HARP project in one of the quatrains. He said the scientists would be fooling around with the energies of the atmosphere, the energies of the Earth, and they would succeed in ripping a hole in the ionosphere.
Oh, no kidding. And that was exactly the stated goal of HARP.
I know, you know, because now, you know, whenever all this began happening, you can see why I had to add 50 pages just in this last year alone. We were even had the absolute accurate dates for the passing of the Hale-Bopp and the Hyakutake comet. They were also in there. And these books were first written in 1989 when they were first printed at that time. So people always said, well, you could say anything. But they were in print long before the Gulf War and all these events began to happen. But Saddam Hussein, in the quatrain, definitely it infers that he would die because there's other events that were supposed to happen after his death. And all during the Gulf War, I was on the air about once a day anywhere, way all over the United States. Everybody wanted to know what was going to happen. And at that time, I kept saying that Saddam Hussein would have to die. He would not live out the war. Well, it hasn't happened, but I think that part is still possible.
Well, that may mean that the war that was being described has not yet occurred.
Well, what Nostradamus said was World War I and World War II had little events that happened before them, before the actual war broke out. But that you don't realize this until you look back on it with history, saying that's where it started. He said that's what will happen when we look back later. We will say that the Gulf War was so important because that was the beginning of everything. And I hope that the Third World War that he foresaw will not happen.
Well, if you look carefully at U.S. And U.N., which seem to be synonymous behavior, it's fairly obvious that we are spoiling for a fight, and we are going to get a fight with Saddam again, come hell or high water. And it's going to be fairly soon, I would imagine.
That's what I'm afraid of, because you know, we're not out of the 90s yet. But he said, during the part about the Gulf War, he said after this war began, and it was going, the little war, he said it would be over oil, and that Saddam Hussein, the DNA was in anagram form, he said he was a madman who people would think would have nuclear capabilities, but he did not have it at that time. But he said that this man would be a forerunner. He would be one of the puppets to set the stage for the third Antichrist. He's not the Antichrist. He's one of the people that are part of the group that prepare the way, so to speak. But after this little war, which would be over oil, and he said there would be different countries in Europe as well as ours that would be involved, then it would escalate. There would be many other little wars in the Middle East. And then we would go to war in what he called the gray area of Europe. He called it the gray area because he said you don't know if you're in Europe or if you're in Asia. And he used the names Macedonia and Albania because he didn't have a name for Yugoslavia at that time. And I lectured in Bulgaria a year ago. I was just over the border, in the Balkans, just over the border from Bosnia. My books are in Bulgarian there. And they said, that we don't understand. Macedonia is not a country, it's an area. And that Bulgaria is indefinitely in that area. So it's an area of Europe. But he said, don't go into that war. If you do, you will not get out. And that's what's happening right now.
Is it not fascinating that our president just announced what I suspected since the first day we went to Bosnia, that it would be an open-ended, we're not going to really ever get out kind of commitment?
Even I do that back in the end of the 80s, that we shouldn't do it. Another prophecy that has come true, he did predict we would have a Democratic president during the time of troubles. And at the time, it seemed like it was impossible Bush was not going to be voted out. But the rest, we did get the president. He's from my state of Arkansas. But the rest of the prophecy had not come true. The rest of that prediction was that this Democratic president would lead our country into war for economic reasons. And in another prophecy, Nostradamus said to watch the year 1995. It was a turning point. If we didn't get into a war by that time, we were going to be all right. So I was watching all of this very carefully. So what happened? Before the end of 1995, he sent the troops into Bosnia.
You bet.
Right where Nostradamus said, you must not go. So to me, you know, I knew they weren't going to get out of there. And if the whole thing is going according to the scenario that he has given us, which is not very good. And he said, if it escalates, we could be in the worst war in history. And he mentioned biological weapons, chemical weapons, nuclear weapons, worse than anything you could possibly imagine.
I have somebody who has faxed named Dusty asking, please ask Ms. Cannon to comment on Nostradamus relative to biological warfare and nuclear weapons in the future that cause plagues. Is it true that Nostradamus refers to New York and London as affected by a plague?
Is that the end of it? Yes, yes, he does. He says that there will be diseases created during this time of trouble that will be used as weapons. And one he explicitly talked about was going to be used against England. I suspect that, you know, if you had to put all this together with a computer in a chronological order, which was very difficult because they were just scattered all over. If you read the book, there is no order to them. So I always said if there's anything wrong with the order, it's my fault because I tried to do it the best way I could.
Okay.
But I am assuming that some of these weapons, these diseases and the different secret weapons will not be created until the war is in full force. That's what I'm assuming. I might be wrong. But one of the diseases they said that would be unleashed on England was a disease that would kill only men. It would attack the what is it, the X or the Y chromosome.
Really?
And that way, only the males would die. And this would, you know, be have to do with armies and things like that. But he definitely did see plagues being unleashed, new diseases that we have no cure for, and that's definitely happening right now.
Certainly is.
And the main thing he wanted to warn us about was this third Antichrist, because he is the one who will be bringing a lot of these things about. He said there's a group of people in the Middle East who have been taking care of this young man and grooming him for this role since he was born. So it's a very definite person. We have a lot of information about him in
this,
the book.
This person is now alive.
Yes, he is. We have his horoscope. We even have a drawing of what he looks like. And we have his horoscope. He was born February the 4th, 1962. So he would be in his 30s now. He's coming up on his birthday here pretty soon.
Yeah, February 4th, 1962.
Yeah, and we have his horoscope. And if there's any astrologers listening, he has a very unusual horoscope. He has what is called a stellium in the first house. I'm not an astrologer, but I had three astrologers helping me with the information. A stellium means all planets, all major planets in one house. It is a tremendous horoscope, and it could be used for either good or evil. But we know a lot about his life. We know where he was born. We know where he went to college. And we do know that he is being groomed for this role by these very group of very rich Arabs in that part of the world.
We know. people through recent modern ages have speculated about things like, it's always been a sort of an ethics question, if you had a chance to go back in time and kill Hitler, would that be something that would be ethically and morally correct to do?
Yeah.
Now, since you have identified the third Antichrist, his birthday, his location, and you know so much about him.
Yeah.
Well,
I know the question. People ask me it all the time.
Well, okay, there it is. So I wouldn't even ask it all the way.
They always say, why can't we go and kill him?
Right, righto. What do you say?
I think it would be impossible. He is very protected. Even though we know where he was born, where he went to college, at the present time, he is living on different estates that belong to these very rich people. He moves around. He has no home of his own. In one of the sessions, we were showing him in Egypt at a big estate on the banks of the Nile. Another time, he was in Syria, and right during the Gulf War, he was in Oman, which is in to the south of Saudi Arabia.
Correct.
You'd have to know exactly where he is, and he is protected very well. I mean, there would be no way to get close to him.
Then let me rephrase the question. Dolores, if you had a gun, and if you were in this person's presence, would you then kill that person?
Well, I don't think I would.
Based on what you know.
I don't think I would have the personality to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But Nostradamus said that this is the point. People don't realize how you can defeat someone like this. He said you don't realize the power of your own mind. That if you know what's going to happen, you could focus on the opposite of that. And that can become your reality. Because you create your own reality in your life constantly. That the future is not set in stone. It is not just one future.
I believe that.
It's many different branches. You can have an incident, an event, and it could branch off in many different directions, many different possibilities from that event, from the worst to the least. You know, in your own life, there are many crossroads.
You bet.
You could have taken another road and ended up to be a totally different person than you are now. And this is what he means. If he showed us the absolute worst that would happen from an event or a personality such as the Antichrist, would we do something to keep it from going down the worst road? But he said you could focus on the opposite and create the opposite. You could create peace and harmony.
But the worst would be?
It would be minimized anyway.
Well, I understand that. But assuming that we don't, and I will give you my reasons for believing we are not going to, assuming that it becomes the worst,
yeah.
What do we have to look forward to?
Well, he said it would be the worst war ever in the history of the world. The absolute worst. I mean, he said you can't even imagine the weapons. A lot of the weapons, even, have already been invented. But the scientists have been working on them in secret for many, many years.
I'm afraid I can't imagine.
I have a one chapter dealing with experimental weaponry. It deals with weather control machinery.
Yes.
And he did say that El Nino was being controlled by scientists. And he said it would begin to act up during the time of troubles, which is happening now. These things are coming true.
Let me tell you a headline that was in the paper not long ago. The Russians offered to create a cyclone.
A cyclone?
No, I'm serious now. The Russians offered the nation, offered Malaysia a demonstration of how they could, with a satellite that they now have orbiting, create a cyclone. And they said, the Russians said, this first one will be a free demonstration. Now, the reason for the cyclone is to clear away the horrendous choking smoke that has been coming from the fires there.
Oh, yeah.
Affecting all of Asia. And the Russians have made this offer. And to me, that means then the Russians now have a satellite orbiting.
Uh-huh.
Capable of actually modifying the weather, as in creation of a cyclone.
Yes, and this sounds like what he was describing. He said he saw something being beamed from up above. A lot of times he wasn't really sure what he was seeing. But he said in addition to weather machines, control machines, there were also machines that could create earthquakes. And that was another type of machine they had. They had already perfected the time control devices similar to the Philadelphia experiment. and that all of these things have already been perfected.
Well, all of that would spring from Tesla technology.
Yes, it would. And, you know, when I first began writing the books and giving the lectures, I was like a blank piece of paper. I had never done a lot of research, and maybe that was the way it was supposed to be. I couldn't censor it. I couldn't change it in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And I began doing the lectures. People began telling me, you don't know what you're talking about, that this is real. It's not fiction. And people began calling me and say, I know what you're saying is true because I'm working on it.
Right.
And that was scary. Because I kept thinking the only way I could handle it was to step back and say it's an interesting story if I don't get involved in the middle of it. But when it begins to come true, then it's a little closer to home. Then what do you do? You're no longer the reporter. That's objective.
I understand. Here's my analogy, and here's why I think that we're in for the worst of it.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite old movies, and I've used this a million times, is The High and Mighty with John Wayne. You're old enough. You remember that, right?
Oh, yeah. We're probably about the same age.
Sure.
I might be older than you.
Well, those were the days of the piston engine aircraft. And we, of course, would fly from the West Coast to Tokyo.
Yeah.
And at some point, about halfway or slightly over halfway with the amount of aviation fuel or gas they could carry, a little red light would come on in the cockpit, and they would say, point of no return. Now, was real serious, and it meant that if anything now goes wrong, you're not going back to California. You are going to Tokyo, or you're going in the water.
Yeah, there's no way to go back.
There's no way to go back. And I am of the view, Dolores, that mankind's little red light came on some time ago.
I believe that.
Now, I don't think it means doomsday. I just think it means a big change is on the way. So I think we're on the same page here.
I think we are, because that's what he said. He said, you've got to tell people what's going to happen.
All right, Dolores, hold it right there. When we come back, we'll go to the phones. This is Dreamland.
This is Dreamland with Art Bell. Now, here again is Art.
Once again, here I am. Dolores Cannon is my guest. Nostradamus, the subject. And depending on what you believe about where we're headed, it could be a little rough directly ahead. Back now to Dolores Cannon, and we are talking, of course, of Nostradamus. Dolores?
Okay, I'm here.
All right, good. I have two fast questions for you, and then we'll go to the phones. One is a straightforward question, and it is simply, how did Dolores qualify him, in quotes, as the, in capitals, Nostradamus?
Okay, but what do you mean? How did I prove it to me? Or
how did you qualify him in your own mind or to your own satisfaction that it was, in fact, the Nostradamus?
Well, I think there was no doubt about the proof because of the tremendous amount of information that was coming through when he was translating the quatrains and all the symbols and anagrams that have puzzled mankind for 400 years. I mean, I couldn't have done that with my own mind. I was just like the reporter taking it down. I only had to ask him one time, read the quatrain one time. At the height of this, it was coming as fast as I could read it. We were doing 30 quatrains in an hour. As fast as I could read it out of the book, he was telling me the symbols, the anagrams, what part of history it went into. Then we went on to the next one. All I had to do was compile it into the computer. I mean, it was mind-boggling. There was no way that any human being could do this on their own. People have written me and said that they take, some of them is working as long as 4 years on one quatrain.
Yes.
And here we were actually the whole time spent with all of this was about 6 months. We're able to do almost 1,000 of these.
Wow.
I've actually worked 3 years because there were breaks in between, but I mean the actual time of working with him.
All right, one more. And
I didn't need any more proof anyway.
I understand. Then it's off to the phones.
Yeah.
This is very interesting. It's just a statement, but you might want to comment on it.
Okay.
It should not be surprising that the quality of the time becomes actual as definition becomes increasingly explicit. This is important to note as knowledge is not exclusive of experience. A caveat would be that as you identify and redefine an idea what is existent in mind becomes actual in fact. Therefore, when you speak as actual, reality is informed. Please have your guest comment on this good show in reality.
Okay, that's a little complex, but I think I know what they're saying.
I think that it could be boiled down to when you say it, you begin to make it so.
Well, I think that's probably true of anything, because everything has to be preceded by thought. Everything that is ever created in the world must start first with thought, with the dream to become a reality.
There you are. Good answer. All right, here we go. First time caller line, you are on the air with Dolores Cannon. Hi.
Hello, Mr. Bell. Hello, Miss Cannon.
Where are you, sir?
I'm calling from Las Vegas.
All right.
My question, I have read some of the works of Nostradamus, and he gave some specific ideas as to when extraterrestrials or alien people would make themselves known to us here on Earth.
Yeah.
And could you comment on some of those?
Okay, yeah, that's, people always ask me that. Did he have any quatrains dealing with the UFOs or aliens? And yes, he did. I was surprised when I found this out. He called them the Others or the Watchers. And he said he called them the Others because they were like us, but other than us. And he called them the Watchers because they had been watching mankind since the beginning of time. But by the time I got into the third volume that I was writing, there were specific quatrains that they would make contact after the time of troubles. We have to go through this first. Because when we get past this, we'll be going into the 1,000 years of peace and what the time of what he called the great genius, the man who would have wonderful inventions to benefit mankind. And he said at that time we would be living in space on space cities, platforms, and we would be traveling in space. By that time, we would have open contact with the aliens and be part of the galactic community, and they would be solidified by that time. But first, we have to get through the time of troubles, because actually, they are afraid of us. We are so violent. That's why we're quarantined, actually, over here in this part of the universe.
And you blame them.
I don't blame them one bit.
All right. Dolores, well, let's just stay on the phones. I will dominate and ask questions if I don't discipline myself. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Dolores Cannon. Hello.
Hi, Ms. Cannon. Do you think it would be possible that these lives that people remember are not their specific previous lives, but perhaps the memories or maybe the ongoing lives of the greater collective consciousness?
Well, this question is asked to me a lot. A lot of people say, could it be genetic memory? Just so, you know, from the cellular memory, or could it be from the great collection out there? I've delved into that, but really I don't think so, because when I do the therapy, the person will go to a lifetime that has great importance in this life, that will explain their problems, sometimes physical problems, you know, and phobias. And I think, and it's always very specific that they know it relates to them. And I don't think it is cellular memory, because of the one case, for instance, that I had where the girl was a Japanese man. And now she's a blonde American living here. And in the Japanese life, him and all his family died in the atomic bomb. So there's no way it could be cellular memory there.
Well, if it was part of the collective consciousness, wouldn't everything be remembered by everyone? And maybe it's not just that specific person remembering that other life. Thought was there. And it was part of the collective consciousness. And maybe that's why we're able to speak to Nostradamus, because we're all part of that.
Well, like I said in the beginning, when I'm speaking to Nostradamus, he is not dead. Mm-hmm. He is alive, living his life.
Well, I think that.
In the second volume, even, I began to wonder if we were helping him write the quatrains. It became very confusing. So that's a different thing, I think, than a collective consciousness.
All right. There you are. Well, you mentioned cellular memory.
Yeah.
I interviewed a very, very nice lady who had a heart and lungs from a young teenage boy transplanted into her. You may know of this story.
Yeah.
She had the immediate cravings of this young man.
Uh-huh.
She had what apparently must have been cellular memory. She actually dreamt the name of her donor, which is never given. She knew all of this. That would indicate there is some sort of cellular transference of memory.
Yes, I think it sounds like it. Because, you know, they say that they can clone another you just from one cell.
Yes.
That cell contains all of what you are, all of the essence of everything. So that would be an interesting concept, that when they transplant organs, they might be getting some kind of a feedback from the original person.
Fascinating.
All right.
But still, in my work, there was nothing like that. It's a memory of another life.
I understand. East of the Rockies, you are on the air with Dolores Cannon. Where are you, please?
This is Vince in Chicago.
Hi, Vince.
Mrs. Cannon, I'd like to pull out more information on your interpretation through Nostradamus of the third Antichrist.
Okay.
First question I have is, the elite that is fronting this third Antichrist at this time, are these the people that we sometimes refer to as the Illuminati?
No, those are two different groups. Because I didn't even know what the Illuminati was, but Nostradamus talked about one group that he called the Cabal. C-A-B-A-L, that means the hidden. And he said that was a different group than this one in the Middle East, that the Cabal was connected to old banking families and generations back to where they were what he called the government behind the government.
So this cabal is what is behind this third Antichrist.
No, it's a different group altogether. They're two separate groups. And he said if they only realized it and got together, they would have much more power. But that the one is wants to keep separate. That the one in the Middle East is composed of some very rich and wealthy Arabs that are brought the riches in the world. And he said, by the time seven leaders arise in that part of the world, you will realize they're not the real leaders of those countries, but the puppets being manipulated behind the scenes.
Yeah, I do see at this time a real effort underway to bring together the entire world financial system. And my next question is, this Antichrist, what is his purpose? Is it to bring a one-world government or a one-world religion or just what?
Well, Nostradamus said they want power, that nothing will ever be enough for them, even though they are extremely rich now. He said they want all. They want it all. It's extreme power. And I said, that doesn't sound sane. And he said, it's not.
Well,
that's what they want.
There is plenty of example on Earth in our past to understand that there are many who pursue that, and there can never be enough power.
He said they were even building an underground city where they could go and let the world destroy itself, and then they figured they'd be able to come back and have the world to itself. So the whole thing does sound very crazy.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dolores Cannon. Where are you, please?
This is Fritz from Phoenix.
Hi, Fritz.
My first question was answered with the first call from Vegas, but my second question is, there's a controversy concerning Century 2, Quatrain 28, about Diana's death.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that. I just came back from England, and they were talking about it over
now
there.
I will fax something to Art and let him take it from there. Thank you. Good show.
Well,
wait a minute. Read the quatrain. I don't know it by the number, but I do know there is the name Diane mentioned in the French.
Well, I got it over in the fax machine, so it's...
Fritz, I'll look for it. Thank you.
If it is the one... See, I don't know them by the numbers. You know, it's hard enough to remember them without the numbers.
Of course.
But the one that they're referring to, people began calling me right after the death and saying, does this refer to the death?
Yes.
In the quatrain, the name Diane is in the French. But in the interpretation, Diane stands for the moon. The goddess of the hunt and the goddess of the moon. It has no relation to Diane. They were just you're looking through the quatrains looking for something, and they picked
yes.
up this one.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dolores Cannon. Where are you calling from, please?
Lansing, Michigan.
All right.
Yes, question would be, if the Antichrist was able to be, picked up in some form and contained, would that affect the outcome of Ms. Fuller's quatrain things there?
Quatrain things?
I think he said. You mean if he was taken away some way, is it in contained, would that affect it?
Yes.
Well, you got to remember, this is a very powerful group of people that have organized this whole thing. And if I would think it would be very possible they would come up with another one. But in the beginning, his parents were killed when he was about 8 years old. So he has been taken care of by these people, and they've been manipulating and, you know, grooming him for this job, that he would be the charismatic leader of the world. Nostradamus said, you must remember, in the beginning, he will appear as a savior, the man with all the answers, the man with the golden tongue. He won't make his first conquests with violence. The same thing that Hitler did. In the beginning, it was rhetoric, being able to talk. And that, he said, is the way he will do it in the beginning, and people won't realize what's happening. So they'd be very gullible. So I think by the time they realize what's going on, it may be too late.
So basically, he could just walk right in front of you, and most people wouldn't even think of it as being
well,
him.
Nostradamus, we have a drawing because one of the people I worked with was a psychic who had helped the police on police cases. She was used to using the police composite kits. So she composed a picture of what she said he looked like.
That I would like to see.
That's in volume 3.
All right. Now, let me stop you and make you talk a little bit about your books. There are 3 volumes
in this,
of
set.
Conversations with Nostradamus.
Yeah.
You have written many books, but obviously the interest is going to be in these.
Yeah.
And if people want to get them, how do they get them, Dolores?
Okay. If you can't find them in your local bookstore, where they should be, but I get letters that say they're not there, then you can call our 800 number, and we can ship them immediately.
All right, and that number is?
1-800-935-0045.
1-800-935-0045. Is that a 24-hour number?
Well, we got to sleep sometimes, but I do have another number if that one is busy. And I give both of them.
I take it that 800 number is actually there where you are?
Yes, this is where I have my office. And
oh, good luck. All
that's
right.
What I was thinking. The other one, well, you know, both of these are in people's homes. But we will try to answer them if you want. You know,
oh, Dolores, you are going to be busy.
Someone told me that. I was not prepared that it was going to be an avalanche.
How many...
Can I give the second one just in case the first one's busy?
Of course.
Okay, I didn't want to give too many. The first one I gave that. The second one is 1-800-230-0312.
I take it that in these books, that's 1-800-230-0312.
But I prefer you use the first one because we're going to stay up most of the night.
You sure are. If one wishes to know the specifics of what is ahead and or see the photograph or so many other things, and these are big books. I've got only volume 3 here, and it is, let me see,
well, they're
about 321 pages. So
yeah, they're close to between 300 and 400 pages.
Mm-hmm.
So, I will tell you, in volume 2, I have maps about the shift of the world, what continents will be left. We have gone into every possibility and probability you can imagine.
All right. Then the main number, folks, if you want to get your hands now, it's going to be hard to get through, so keep trying is the operative word here. 1-800-935-0045.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got a chance of actually speaking with you, I take it.
Well, after we're off the air, but my daughter runs my office, and she'll probably be answering it after it gets late.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dolores Cannon. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Where are you?
My name's Harry. I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Okay.
Been listening to the show. It's interesting. Dolores has said several things I had never heard that Nostradamus has said before, like the president having come from Arkansas. But I'd like to have some kind of reference. Is there a quatrain that you can point to that gives us that information?
Yes. I didn't say he'd come from Arkansas. He said he was going to be a Democrat. That would be a Democrat. I said he came from Arkansas. I was surprised. But the quatrain does say that he was going to have a Democratic president during the time of troubles. I don't have my book in front of me, or I can pull out the prophecy for you. But I'd have to be able to give you the number.
Is there any quatrain you can give us that which would give us some new information? Democratic, you know, can mean two things.
A Democratic president.
Any of our presidents could be considered democratic, depending on how you take the word.
During the time of troubles, no, he specifically referred to the Democratic Party.
So that we might understand terms, it is the Democrat Party. There certainly are Republicans who are part of the Democratic system. So
no, he said this was definite because he said. Your American government seems to be that whenever you have a Democratic president, you go to war. I mean, if you have a republic, you usually have recessions. So he said it would be a Democratic president during the time of troubles, and that this president would lead us into the war for economic reasons.
All right. Well, I hate to get into a fight about words.
I could give you the number, but I just don't have it right here.
All right.
You call the office later, and you can get through, and I'll give you the number.
All right. Again, the operative numbers. The main number is 1-800-935-0045. You can call that now. Or you might try 1-800-230-0312. I'm Art Bell, and from an area in the desert near Dreamland, this is Dreamland.
Now, more of your calls on Dreamland with Art Bell.
Back to Dolores Cannon and her trilogy, Conversations with Nostradamus, which you can get, and we will get that phone number out again. I suspect they're already getting very busy. Dolores,
yeah.
Let me read this to you from Fritz, who called a little while ago. Indeed, it came through. Entitled Nostradamus's Predicted Dies, Death, and Funeral. Like everyone else, your editor was shocked and saddened by the death of Princess Diana and her friend Dodi Al-Fayed in Paris 2 weeks ago. Now, this was obviously written some time ago. While most modern psychics seem to have missed the boat on this tragedy, I wondered how the Babe Ruth of prediction, Nostradamus himself, had made out. Turns out the old master has hit another home run. Check out this item, Century 2, Quatrain 28. And I will not endeavor to read the French, but rather...
I don't know the French anyway.
quote, the last son of the man with the prophet's name will bring Diana to her day of rest. At a distance, they wander in frenetic grief, delivering a great people from ruin. The father of Dodi Al-Fayed, the owner of Herod's department store, is named Muhammad, the name of the Islamic prophet.
Okay.
The rest of Nostradamus' prophecy is self-evident.
Okay, well, I haven't heard that one. The other one they were talking about was dealing with a planetary thing, and they had to do with space travel. That one, we interpreted a different way, but, you know, he did tell us there was more than one interpretation for the different quatrains. They would refer to many events. But normally he said he didn't focus on an individual person unless they had something to do with the whole picture, the world. And, you know, people say that he mentioned Elvis and things like that, you know, and O.J. But it's a possibility then because Diana did affect a lot more people than the normal person would.
All right.
It's a possibility that could be an alternate interpretation.
All right, Dolores, could you feed us some goodies? Somebody here says, I'm not an expert on Nostradamus, but every prediction your guest has made thus far is not, in quotes, news. they've been available in some interpretation of the quatrains, and others would claim so as well. So is there anything you can give us in your conversations that is yet to come that would surprise people?
Okay, that's one of the things you got to remember, though. If it is definitely set, then, you know, set in time, all the different psychics have covered a lot of these same predictions.
It's true.
It may not be new.
It is true.
Except that we got a lot of this back in the 1980s when it was before it began to happen. Okay, that's the main thing he wanted us to warn us about was the possibility of this Third World War. Let's see, something new. He talked a lot about natural disasters. He said that there would be an increase in the natural disasters during this time because the Earth has been shifting gradually for the last 40 years. It's that big sudden shift is the one that we have to watch out for. But it has been shifting gradually, and as this happens, all the weather phenomena and all the things that are occurring now, he predicted would happen. He said, watch the pattern. Incidentally, he said it would not take a war to empty the coffers of the world.
Mm.
It would only take these increased disasters. He says, watch the pattern. First, that there will be earthquakes where there have always been earthquakes. Then there will be earthquakes where they have never occurred before. And this is happening. He says, watch for the reawakening of the Ring of Fire.
Indeed.
Volcanoes that have been dormant for hundreds of years would begin to reawaken. And this is happening. And he did say that the weather patterns would change and the climates would change.
And that's happening.
All of that is definitely happening now. He gave us three predictions that were supposed to happen before the end of the 90s. That's the closest the date we could get to them, and so far they have not happened, and some of them deal with weather. The first one, it had to do with California, And a lot of people, when I go out there, they keep saying, when is the big one going to hit? You know, they keep thinking about the earthquakes.
Right.
The quatrain that he refers to with L.A. does not deal with earthquakes, but it deals with the Santa Ana winds coming in. And he, incidentally, he called in the quatrain, he called L.A. the Maritime City of the Crystal Swamp.
Mm-hmm.
And when he refers to New York, he refers to canyons and, you know, like towers as being canyons and mountains.
Yes, yes.
But New York, but L.A., he said, when he looked at it, it was like looking at a crystal swamp, because he saw the reflections of all the glass, you know, the sun on the glass. And he said it was like a swamp because you can get lost in it. But he said it would happen around this time of the year. In fact, he said it would be the winter solstice, is when this prophecy would happen, that the temperatures would rise so high that it would be up to 120 degrees. And this would be mostly caused by the Santa Ana winds moving in over L.A. And he said, naturally, during that time when this happens, somebody will throw a cigarette out. They will start a fire in the mountains. But the people would be dropping like flies from the heat. This was specific. He didn't mention the earthquakes, although there probably will be one. He said that the people in that area are very accustomed to earthquakes, and it doesn't even bother them anymore. They won't flee if you tell them to. But that was one about L.A. dealing with the winter, at the height of the winter, there would be this tremendous heat. The other one dealt with an earthquake and a volcanic eruption at the same time. He indicated it was going to be on the North American continent, but he didn't know exactly where it was. He didn't tell us that. He said it was going to be a volcano that has been dormant for, hundreds and hundreds of years.
Have you been watching Mammoth?
I saw something on the news the other night that they said there's a volcano out there that's beginning to rumble. Is that? I began to wonder, could that be the one?
Well, at Mammoth, they are either in or close to a yellow alert. They haven't exactly told us whether they've gone to yellow or not. There are those who believe that they have. And that would be the birth of a new volcano at Mammoth.
He said that the soil will be red where this happens. I don't know if that area is the area or not.
All right.
But he says when the volcano erupts, there will be an earthquake at the same time, and a city at the base of this will be destroyed. And the rivers will run red, not only from blood, but from the color of the soil. So a lot of people have told me there is red soil out in California. But when I spoke in Santa Fe, they said Santa Fe is really the middle of a caldera there that's very ancient and has red soil. So different people have been trying to find out where this is going to be. But it was interesting that that definitely was an old volcano up there in California that's beginning to rumble and show signs of life.
Are you familiar with Gordon Michael Scallion?
Yes, I know him very well. We started out together years ago.
Yes, Gordon's a very good friend,
yeah.
And he has had visions of L.A., which include, he talked about incredible amounts of glass from skyscrapers on the ground. He saw visions of people fleeing from the Southern California area to my area, thank you very much, Nevada.
Oh, yeah.
And that sounds an awful lot like what you brushed up against here shortly.
Okay. Well, the third, let me tell you the third prediction deals also with weather.
Please.
This was going to be the worst hurricane ever in history. And it would hit Florida, but it would hit on the side where the NASA facilities are located. I thought at first when Hugo came through there, and, you know, there was another one, about a year or so ago that were really bad.
Yes.
But they were on the Gulf side. This one, I guess, NASA is on the ocean side, I believe, isn't it?
NASA is on the eastern side of Florida.
Yeah, that would be on the Atlantic side.
Yeah, that's correct, yes.
Okay. Well, he said that this hurricane would be the worst ever, and it would hit that area because it would destroy most of the NASA facilities.
Very, very interesting, because during the El Nino years, Atlantic hurricanes are either suppressed or nearly non-existent, while on the other hand, Pacific hurricanes are horrendous. We are now in El Nino. The largest wind gust ever recorded on the face of the earth was just recorded on Guam the other day, when a super typhoon hit it at 236 miles per hour.
Yeah, it's the worst ever.
Yeah,
see,
worst
this
ever.
Is what Nostradamus said, is the temperature of the ocean only has to increase by a few degrees to multiply the force of the hurricanes 100 times what they are now. And
well,
that's what's happening. The temperature of the oceans are increasing.
That is
the
exactly
ice is
right.
melting. You know, the ice is melting in Antarctica and in the glaciers.
Yes, I'm well aware. And,
I'm sure
that he is correct about a very few degrees making a remarkable difference in the strength of whatever would be cooked up in the Atlantic or Pacific.
Now, he said that if they were smart, they would move the NASA facilities because it's going to hit there.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dolores Cannon. Hello.
Hello. My name is Johan.
Yeah.
And where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Atoka, Oklahoma.
Okay.
That's close to us.
Yes,
in
it
Arkansas.
Is. First, I would like to ask you, Art, to check with Linda Moulton Howe. I mailed her a package of 137 pages
okay.
on December the 1st.
All right. Well,
it was signed on on December the
6th. Okay, well, I'm sure she has it. But do you have a question, sir?
Yes. In Nostradamus' prophecies, most of the star information, the planet information, is about specific people with those birth signs and not the literal stars themselves. It depends on which prophecy that we're talking about. I am written of in those prophecies because I am the Messiah.
Oh.
I am the fourth and last Antichrist.
You are?
There were only supposed to be three.
No, there are four.
Okay.
The third Antichrist is behind the one world order and the three factions that are behind the one world takeover that they're trying to do.
Okay.
How do you know you are the Messiah?
That's
an obvious question.
Well, first off, I was born with six fingers on each hand. I was out of Beth, my mother. That's in Micah 5:2 in the Bible. It's a long, long chain of events and things that I explained.
Yes, but many people have six fingers
in that package. Yes, I understand that.
All right. Well, obviously, it's going to take too long to go into here.
Okay.
So I don't know. Maybe you never know, Dolores.
Yes, I know. I get letters and calls from these from people that say the same things. So you're not alone, sir. Anyway,
there is a Messiah complex, but then on the other hand, one of these days, one of these people.
Who's to say?
Who's to say? Exactly. Okay. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dolores Cannon. Hello.
Yeah. Hi, Don, Art, this evening, and Dolores, Merry Christmas and blessings to both of you.
Thank you.
I would like to validate some of the things that Dolores is saying. My name is Suleiman. I'm calling from Richmond, California.
Yes, sir.
I left Los Angeles 6 months prior to the last earthquake because I knew that it was going to occur. I come from a family that's very psychic on my mother's Portuguese, my father's a mixture. And it's interesting that tonight that you had Dolores on because I had my book open in regards to reading some of the quatrains from Nostradamus before your show started. Anyway, number one is that I was part of an organization called Communication East in Los Angeles that was started by Casey Kasem, who was Lebanese, and he gathered all these very powerful Jews and Arabs in the United States to help resolve the problems in the Middle East, and they invited me to join their organization. And during that time, I was given a very strong vision in regards to something similar to what Dolores basically spoke about the Antichrist. I saw this young, brown-skinned Arab. He was about 14 or 15 when the vision first started. And I saw all these powerful people around him in a circle initiating the ceremony. The next scene, he was about 21 or 22, and it was a triangle, and he fought off two different young challengers. He became the focal point of the Arab world. And then the third scene, I saw all the Arab world unite with this particular young man, and I saw a war started in the Middle East that carried into Europe.
All right, well, that sounds right about on the same page as Dolores.
You know, I will say, too, I've been getting letters since my books first came out in 1989, people having visions and dreams and just like flashes out of the blue that are very similar to these predictions. And I keep thinking maybe it's because it's out there and people who are susceptible will pick it up.
Well, people tend to comment gee, you know, we hear the same thing from Dolores Cannon and from so many others who claim to be psychics. But then again, you've got to consider if these various channels of psychic ability have any are valid, then they would tend to report the same probable futures.
Yeah.
And that would validate the whole thing, in my opinion. East of the,
I would be very suspicious if it was contradictory.
Precisely. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dolores Cannon. Hello.
Yes. I don't know about if Mr. Thomas ever said anything about the New World Order or anything like that.
Well, yes. We touched on that earlier. The third Antichrist is now alive and is in the Middle East and is being protected by, I guess, the people that you could think of as those who would be behind the New World Order or grab for power. Is that fair?
Yeah, yeah, but like I said before, there were two groups, and he might be thinking of the one that Nostradamus calls the Cabal, and that is more or less in the western part of the world. So you
all
have
right.
two different groups.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dolores Cannon. Hi. Hello.
Art?
Yes.
Oh, I thought this was first time caller line.
No, it is not.
Art, this is Alpheus. I am calling from Ohio. And
yes.
I'd like to thank Dolores for identifying the Antichrist and the gentleman earlier for identifying himself as the Messiah. It's taken a great deal of strain off of me.
Okay.
Dolores, with all this prophecy and Art, you know, I listen to your shows and I enjoy them quite a bit. I wonder just what's the point of a Messiah and an Antichrist if we're not going to make it anyhow? So, I mean, we have all these...
No. Nobody said we're not going to make it.
Yeah, that's a very negative way to look at it. We have to look on the bright side.
There are going to be changes to come.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
That's what I tell people. Before the year 2000, there's going to be tremendous changes. But I believe mankind is a survivor. He will survive. And it doesn't mean this is the end of everything. There's been a lot of times in history when everybody thought it was the end of the world because of the events, but we're going to come out of this, and I hope we'll make it the least, you know, the least of the worst possible scenarios, and come out of it, you know, hardly scratched at all.
Well, that's up to us.
It's up to us. It's all in our hands.
First time caller line. Not a lot of time left. You're on the air with Dolores Cannon.
Dolores, how are you doing?
Okay.
Where are you, sir?
I'm in Canada. My name's Cram.
All right.
Quantrain 97, it's one of the popular ones. Stefan Paulus, I believe, has a book. He's written about it.
Yeah.
It's the last line, if I'm confusing, it says, they wish to see the Normans proven.
You have to read the whole thing. I don't know the number. You have to read the entire.
Quantrain talks about 45 degrees. The sky will be a light fire approaching
the
great new city. That one?
Yeah, that one.
I'll tell you what, there isn't much time, Art said, but take a look at the biggest non-nuclear explosion in history that took place in Halifax Harbor when two ammunition ships collided, one being French, as a matter of fact, and it's right at 45 degrees, and the fire, the flame explosion sprung up from the harbor, which it does say in the Quantrain, but more importantly, Stefan Paul says this part about the Normans to be proven.
Yeah.
He says it's confusing, but if you look at it, the history of our world, the North American continent, they believe was founded by the Vikings, which were the Norsemen called the Normans.
Well, that's
a possibility.
Nostradamus is definitely referring to the French in that quatrain, and it has to do with a missile that will be fired at the United States, and the French will help to stop it or to help once it has been fired.
Right.
That's what it comes from, the 45-degree angle in that quatrain. But as I said before, he said there were many different other definitions. It doesn't just mean one. He was giving me the one I should know, but there were other definitions possible in all of the quatrains.
Dolores, we are out of time. It has been a distinct pleasure. Dolores has a trilogy on the subject we've been discussing tonight entitled Conversations with Nostradamus, 3 books, volume 1 through 3, and you can get them by calling 1-800-935-0045 or 1-800-230-0312. Dolores, I'm sorry, the clock says we've got to go. It has been a great pleasure.
It really went fast.
Oh, it went fast, and we will do it again, I assure you.
Okay, I want to thank you for having me on.
Good night, Doris.
Okay, Merry Christmas.
Good night. From the high desert, good night.